Hi everyone, I'm Allie Jackson Jolly. I'm here with Tenetin Japaridze. She is an expert in Eurasia security and risk with the Eurasia Group. Tenetin, welcome and thanks for being here with us.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, so early Monday morning, Vladimir Putin was re-elected president of Russia. The fact that he was re-elected came as no surprise to anyone. The fact that he won by 87.2%, almost 90% of the popular election, was a bit of a surprise. What should we know about this blowout result?
Thank you. Well, first of all, I think we need to bear in mind that in a way, this election was of twofold importance to the Putin regime. One, it was a presidential election that was essentially going to and has already made him president pretty much for life. So he is leader for life as far as he's concerned, as far as his constituents are concerned, even those who are not necessarily happy about this. And then, second of all, this was treated as a referendum on what has transpired over the last couple of years with Russia's full-scale invasion of Ukraine, the ongoing war. This was a way of showing that the population writ large in Russia supports the war, and it supports the president's policies beyond just the war domestically and in terms of the foreign policy. So that is why I think it's one of the reasons, at least, that we're seeing such an inflated number that even by Putin's standards, this was really something I thought when the original numbers started trickling through that we would actually see them try to adjust it to make it look more credible. But that did not happen, and it looks like this is going to be very close to the final result that we will see on the 21st of March when the CEC finally reveals the final vote.
Yeah, and so was this a real election? Would you consider this to be a real election? What do you think?
It's very difficult to talk about the current regime in Russia as a real regime in a democratic sense. I mean, it's a regime that did get elected at one point, but I think over time we have seen an actual decline in how far they are willing to go to make this look like a credible election. Like credible results, vote results. So, in terms of us talking about the election in Russia today, I mean, it's very difficult to talk about it as an election without putting it either in parentheses or perhaps trying to sort of say it in a way that is going to still be diplomatic, but ultimately saying that at the end of the day, the elections in Russia are sham elections, as are the results, because it is not quite as close to the truth as perhaps the Putin regime would like it to be. On the other hand, the flip side is that the population is not that far off from supporting Putin to this degree. There are still many who support the course, some because of, out of either conformist tendencies or perhaps fear. And then there's another group that genuinely feels that he is doing what is right by the country. And some call themselves patriots, and others essentially just accept that what they have is, in Russia is better than what everyone else has and what everyone else is doing outside of Russia.
So for the most part, I think what I'm hearing is that a large part of the population trusts President Putin and approves of him. Is that correct?
Yes, although I think the way that we think about trust and the way that we think about approval over here, even in the United States and in more democratic countries compared to Russia, is very, very different. I would say that in a way that would sort of be easier for us to understand here, I think they accept him. They accept their fate. They accept Russia's fate. They accept that he is the man to lead the country. And historically, we have always seen a version of this in Russia, whether it's in the imperial times or in the Soviet times. There was this sense of acceptance. It's not necessarily dark either, and it's not terribly pessimistic either. It's more like this is what the cards that we've been dealt with, and essentially we are going to make the most of it. And when they're constantly being fed the Russian state propaganda of look what they're doing to us out there in the West, as they like to talk about everything but Russia and Russia's friends outside of the country. They start to feel a certain sense of national pride, a certain sense of trying to make the most of what they have, as I said earlier, but also accepting their fate and accepting the fact that they would rather have an imperfect version of democracy that is their own, as opposed to trying to be something that they're not because someone out there, such as the United States, or so they feel, is going to tell them that this is how you should be living. And that is one of the reasons why the 90s sort of chaotic and wild 90s narrative is still very popular with the Putin regime. And they remind people all the time that remember what happened to us when we lived by their quote unquote rules. We are now going to do things our way, and we've been doing things our way. And even if they don't like us, they will respect us, or at the very least fear us. And this fear has sort of become one of the ways of propagating and trying to cultivate a sense of patriotism, fear both within and fear outside as well. The outside world fearing Russia is somehow equated within the country as a way of feeling respected, even if it's not necessarily our understanding of what respect may entail.
Yeah, but you bring up a good point. When I heard you say multiple times, it's sort of like this idea that we're going to do things our way, not the Western way. And yet it is interesting that this title of president is so important, or so it seems to Vladimir Putin. So a couple of interesting things I read this morning were that most election watchers have said that 87.2% is actually pretty accurate, although most do not call this a fair and democratic process, while Vladimir Putin has said, yes, this was a democratic process, and in fact, this is a democratic presidency. Why do you think that it is so important to Vladimir Putin to keep up this image of this democratic presidency?
For their version of democracy, right? So for quite a while, in the early 2000s, I would say maybe even early 2010s, there was a sense of let's talk about democracy, but on our terms. And it was coined sovereign democracy or managed democracy, which when you put the word managed next to democracy, it's very difficult to actually think about it through the prism of what we think is democracy. So in that respect, because it, you know, takes away from the populations and from the constituents' agency, among other things, it's very difficult for Putin, even if he wants to, and for the Kremlin more broadly, to take Russia back in terms of time, in terms of history, because they need to continue showing progress, that they're moving forward, that they're not moving back. And this is Putin's way of talking about modernizing Russia, but again, a Russia that is rooted in what he likes to constantly remind us of as traditional Russian values. Traditional Russian values are not always seen through the same prism as, for example, the more modernized versions of what one's values could be. Also, he talks about the decadent West and how those values are trying to impede on, in the best case scenario, on the Russian traditional values. So in that respect, this is just another way of saying that, yes, we have elections. Yes, we have a president. No, we're not calling him a czar. We are not going to cancel elections, because also if they cancel elections altogether, it will be very hard for them to show something that resembles a referendum to essentially remind everyone, including those inside and outside of Russia, that the majority, and in this case, the absolute majority of the population, supports the course that the country is on. It's not so much that he needs to see at this point that the country supports him. He takes it as a given. And I truly believe that deep down in his heart, he believes that 87% of the population trusts him, supports him, and wants to see him at the helm of the vertical of power. The question is, and the bigger question for him is, he wants to keep seeing justification of his policies and also support from the majority of the population when it comes to his decision making and his policy making. That is important to him. That continues to be important to him, because even the polling numbers that we are seeing that are not necessarily independent polls, but those that are supported and backed by the state, they're not always telling of what the population really thinks. And he knows that. He knows that there is a level of fear and a level of self-censorship where an average Russian is not going to willingly say that, no, they do not support Vladimir Putin, because they're afraid, and quite rightly so, especially now as repressions are going up. Dissent is essentially being kept at its minimal. As soon as the Kremlin sees certain signs of there could be a real grassroots movement here, they shut it down very quickly. And that at some point will also start to get a little bit harder for the Kremlin to manage, while at the same time calling their system a democratic system, even if they say that this is their version of democracy and the best version of democracy, because at some point, those two concepts, in this case, severe repressions and severe censorship and democracy, just don't gel together. And the people are smart. And he knows that. And he knows that there's only so far that he can bend whatever he wants to bend in his own direction, a direction that is suitable to him. And he will have to understand that some subtlety is important, even though the Russian regime, the Putin regime, has definitely not been subtle over the last few years, and they will probably become less and less subtle as time goes by.
And what does it mean to be the president of Russia now? Can you just, I know that's a big, heady question,
I've
but
never
I feel
served
like
in this position.
I feel
Full
like
disclosure.
I feel like there's no one better to make us smart about that than you. So what would you say that means right now?
It must be hard. It must be hard, Ali, because I have a feeling that after he served in this position for almost 25 years, it'll be 25 years soon, it can't be that fun anymore. But he's trapped. He's trapped because if he leaves, he doesn't know what's going to happen to him and to his family and to those who are very close to him, his very tightly knit circle of the trusted advisors and the Kremlin cronies, as we like to call them sometimes. So leaving is not an option. Staying on is the only option he has for essentially survival in every sense of the word, and not only political survival, because he has no guarantees. He can't really go anywhere. I mean, he could probably go to North Korea, but I'm not sure he wants to, right? So there's very little that he can do. So in that respect, he doesn't have a whole lot of freedom. Yes, he does enjoy absolute power, or to a degree, absolute power, I would say, in his own country. But is that everything that he's ever wanted? I think his peak years were when he essentially was calling the shots, and he had all of the world leaders who were calling him and begging for his time, and he was always the last one to arrive at every leaders meeting, every summit, and everyone would just stand and patiently wait for him. And he does miss that. I would be very surprised if he didn't miss those quote unquote good times that he had. And I think that is one of the main reasons why the war, the full-scale invasion of Ukraine was, I would say, even from the Kremlin's perspective, not that they can do very much about it now because they're in a dead end, it was a miscalculation, I think. And the power that he had, not only at home, but also abroad, I would be very surprised if he wasn't missing it.
Yeah. And you're helping me to think about the second part of this interview that I wanted to ask you about, which is what the future looks like for Russia. What does the war look like? So, you know, President Putin just was reelected. He has 6 more years, and then probably a bunch more. And he is enjoying this 87.2% win. What do you expect us to see out of President Putin moving forward?
Well, I hate to disappoint you, but I don't think we're going to see anything good in particular. I don't think we'll see a whole lot of changes. The sense that we're getting, including from his speech when the results were first unveiled last night, and he made his big speech thanking his constituents and those who had worked on the election, including the volunteers and the cabinet. I think in many ways he is going to try to maintain the same course that the country has been on over the last couple of years, with minimal opportunities to rock the boat. We will probably not see a major cabinet shuffle. The prime minister certainly looks like he will be staying on, and there will be other key members of the cabinet that he's going to try to keep. That said, he must also understand that a lot of his cabinet members are up there in terms of their age, as is he. So they may be considering ways to introduce fresh and new blood in terms of trying to have the younger population, but at the same time, those who understand and are on the same page as him in terms of not just their policy making and their views on policy, but also in terms of how they view things broadly, so that they are still very much on the same page, so there is minimal pushback against what he's going to try to do over the next 6 years, if not the next 12 years, if his health continues to hold. For the population, I think the next 6 years will also be less than fun and not as worthy of celebration as he wanted to sort of paint the picture yesterday when he made his speech. This was supposed to be a big moment for Russians, that, you know, Russia, Putin, and future are all synonyms. I think for the broader population, the next 6 years will be tougher, certainly tougher than the last two. We will see more exaggerated versions of repressions that I discussed earlier, of censorship, which will be less and less subtle. I think right now we're talking mostly self-censorship. We will see more outright censorship, not so much in terms of trying to influence the everyday life, like the Soviets, where we're trying to pursue that approach of trying to influence every single person's everyday activity and every thought. That is less likely to happen. I think now it's going to be more about instilling more and more fear, and therefore through that, trying to control, and more than just control, trying to ensure that freedom and also freedom of thinking, of independent thinking in particular, is going to be impeded as much as possible, or at the very least under the Kremlin's control. We are absolutely going to see more of that. We're seeing that with arrests, and one of the reasons why the public arrests are so public, of those who are very well-known figures in Russia, not just independent thinkers, but even those that I think some would have been surprised to hear even a few months ago, that they would get into trouble with the authorities. But they did make a slight faux pas, and now here they are. So trying to signal to the population that if you're not with us, not only are you against us, but we are going to ensure that you have very little freedom and very little choice beyond either trying to abide by what we are telling you to do, or, I mean, if they're lucky, they can leave the country and never come back. Or they stay in the country, but either they get arrested, they're constantly fined, there's a lot of naming and shaming. So their livelihood and their existence becomes next to unbearable in their own country. We will probably see more and more of that. But if these public arrests are consumed by the masses in terms of them tuning in and really taking it all in, then the Kremlin will hope that they will be able to minimize more more tendencies when it comes to grassroots movements to try to cross that red line. Because that red line, I mean, it really has shifted, but it has also become brighter and more threatening over time, especially the last few months. The economy is another factor that's worth bearing in mind. I think we haven't really seen the full scale and the full level of impact that we anticipate in terms of, at some point soon, everyone, not just outside of Russia, but also inside Russia, and particularly those who may not even know about the full extent of the Western sanctions and the various packages that we've seen over the last couple of years, it will start to impact their everyday lives. And once that happens, and it'll take time, it usually does, then I think either at that point, the Putin regime has to offer the population something, even if it's not something better, at least an alternative to fill that gap, or there will be pushback. And that has to be one of the things that he is afraid of. Another factor that he is certainly thinking about in terms of fear is going to be another potential mobilization. Not that we're seeing any real need to mobilize any more troops, but if that does happen, he has to be very careful there as well. There's certain things that the general public, the Russian society, is not necessarily going to care about, but there are other things that they will really care about as soon as it starts to affect them and their everyday lives, which is why, yes, initially there was this shock when the full-scale invasion happened, but shortly thereafter, we saw that even those who were outraged went very quiet and started accepting the current reality as one that they have to live with, and, which is even worse, some not just accepted it, but actually embraced it and said that, well, we didn't have a choice and the war was a good idea because the alternative was so much worse. So those people did not necessarily feel the impact of these policies and these moves on the Kremlin's part firsthand. Once they start to feel that, I think we are going to see some pushback. It will take time. So I don't think we're going to see mass protests across Russia anytime soon. It could take time. But if the Kremlin is not working on a plan B to essentially try to give them something to pacify them, to satisfy them in short increments, over time, it could become a problem.
And so you said there's a couple of things that the people of Russia will really care about, push back.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I just want to verify this. It's an economy. So if economic situation gets worse and mobilizing the troops, as in more Russian people are asked
mm-hmm.
to go to the front line, those are the kinds
mm-hmm.
of things that could cause some trouble for Putin. Is that correct?
Yes, absolutely. But when we think about economy, it's not so much the GDP or wartime economy, but really the everyday livelihood that is impacted. So for example, if the price of eggs, as we saw not too long ago, right, or price of bananas continue to skyrocket, at some point that will become a bigger problem than anything else. If the next winter is just as cold for many in Russia who had no heating, with no hot water, that could actually become a much bigger issue than any of the other big issues that we over here, this side of the ocean, are monitoring, because an average Russian won't really care. They don't even care about the reputational risks. I mean, yes, they don't like being disliked by the majority of the Western population, but also an average Russian is not necessarily someone who, even in the good old days, used to be able to afford a trip abroad to London, to New York, to Paris. Those who are impacted by that, yes, they are very upset. And the so-called elites are quite upset. And there has been some pushback because they are no longer welcome, and it can't possibly feel good to be a persona non grata.
All right. Well, so we're almost out of time. I have one final question, really looking to the very future. So in a future when Vladimir Putin is no longer the president of Russia, do you believe that Russia can come back to its more democratic days? Do you think there's ever a future where there's and I'll say, using your terms, that more Western version of democracy for Russia?
Well, first of all, please give me a call when that happens. But also, I wouldn't hold my breath right now. But I think at the end of the day, certainly down the line in the future, we will see a very different Russia. And it has happened that way before, right? It always comes back in a full circle. It's almost like a cycle that Russia goes through, historically has done, and probably will continue to. And I think this is more of a comfort zone, not so much what we're seeing now, but let's say what we were seeing 10 years ago, right? It was sort of this more managed democracy, and there was no war, and things weren't great, but things weren't bad. And they had everything that they needed. An average Russian probably had less, but nonetheless, the majority of the population was happy with the status quo. I think we are likely to see the other extreme at some point. I think things will have to get worse before they get better. There will be a more, what we call a more Western version of democracy that we see in Russia, just like we did in the 90s. It was not the first time we had seen it, and certainly won't be the last time we'll see it. But I think just like before, it'll be much shorter. So it's almost like those democratic windows are more narrow. And what we're seeing now and over the last 25 years or so, over the last 25 years or so, that has been sort of the comfort zone that tends to stretch much longer. So will we see a different Russia? Yes, we will. Will we see a very different leader compared to Putin? It depends on what we think about a different leader. When we think about a leader that the majority of the Russian population will want to vote for, I think a very independent leader would be very difficult for the majority of constituents to vote in, because in a way, certain aspects that the majority of Russians have accepted and some signed off on and some actually embraced don't necessarily jive with what we saw even in the Yeltsin years, even the better Yeltsin years, where it seemed that the country was moving toward the West. It was becoming more and more open. It was certainly becoming more accepted and embraced in the West as well. And somehow that did not necessarily last. And I think that happened for a reason. It had little to do with just Yeltsin's policies, but some of it was also because that was not necessarily a natural state for Russia and for many of the Russian people who would, I still think, prefer the early Putin or the early version of Putin rather than, let's say, late Yeltsin, because even today, when they talk about the wild 1990s, it's not necessarily in very positive connotations that they paint those days. In their memory, I mean, yes, there are some who look back on it with nostalgia, but there has been so much state propaganda ensuring that very few of those Russians who support Putin will look back on those days and think, fond thoughts and want to go back to that. That it's very hard to imagine that Russia will end up in that place anytime soon. Will these repressions become a little too much to bear? And will people want to go back to something that is more sort of middle of the road and more normal in terms of their normal existence? I think so. And I think the Putin regime is taking this current situation a little too far. And at some point, they will either have to scale back or it could just become a little too much for the population.
Yeah, well, now we are out of time. Thank you so much for making us smarter about these really complex world policies about Russia and Putin. And definitely, please do come back and talk with us some more the next time there's a little bit of a change in the air. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.